Hey everyone, Arjuna here. Welcome to a new episode of Thoughtscast. This time it's Thoughts to and from Sherby Town, an episode where I go to Sherbrooke, Quebec, which is a small city in southeastern Quebec, to hang out at their new in-person game dev meetup and participate in a game jam. And I need to get in the car right now, so see ya. Oh hey Pete, I just got this bag and I'm ready to go.
What do you mean? You're not going, you're not real.
Why can't I go if I'm not real?
Fair enough. But Robo-G can't come, we'd have a hell of a time explaining him at the border.
Well yeah, somebody has to look after the chickens.
Alright, let's go.
Cool.
Je suis pas le plus beau, le plus intelligent, je suis pas en héros, j'ai peut-être même pantalon, oui mais... J'ai eu gross. Oh hey, you're back, Arjuna.
Yep, Pete'll be down in a minute. He just needs to find a place to put the lightsaber he wanted for the game jam. Oh, and there he is now. And he's walking past us and plopping down on the bed.
Someday, I'm gonna figure out how to sleep well in a hotel. At least in one that isn't in Boston.
Ooh. Do you guys mind, stepping out and, working on LMS for a while? I think I'm gonna monopolize the microphone for the rest of the podcast.
Okay. You sure you don't need a nap?
Nah, I'll be fine. Thanks anyway.
Okay. See ya.
Hey, listeners. I guess I just needed a nap for, 4 hours. Yeah, and I asked Arjuna and Robo Gonzalez to step out because I need to talk about a few things that happened before they showed up, which, weirdly enough, are related to this trip. So, if you listened to the first episode of Interesting People with Evan Tolley, you know that I used to work for an international human rights organization, and 9 years ago, I went to this hacker conference in Amsterdam, and my boss at the time, Gustav, was at Access's office in Tunisia, and if anybody knows the history of Tunisia 9 years ago, it was a scary time. Mohamed Brahmi, one of the major opposition politicians, was assassinated, and the day of his funeral, somebody set off a car bomb that destroyed an unmarked police vehicle on the outskirts of town. And given the date that it happened and some stuff that Gustav told me about once we met up in Amsterdam, I think he heard the explosion from the plane out of Tunis. And then, like, after about a week in Amsterdam, there was some discussion about me coming down to Tunis to talk with some other folks who were working in the tech side of Access. At the same time, the State Department had issued a travel warning for anyone coming to Tunis because things were seeming kind of unstable. But I went anyway. Everything worked out fine. But ever since then, I've kind of marked that as this is the most dangerous international trip I've ever taken. Until last week, when I went to Sherbrooke, because, like, in Maine, the case count is pretty low. I think we're down to about 10 cases per 100,000. Although, just my luck, I just saw on the news that there's likely going to be an uptick in cases here in Maine because of what the wastewater data is saying. But the fact is, Sherbrooke has about 30 times, or had about 30 times the case number per 100,000, but this was the first in-person game dev event that had been organized up there in a long time, and who knows when they would have another one. So I get up to the border, and I'm on the side of the car where I'm talking to the border guard. And by the way, I decided to wear my kalpak to this trip. Now, a kalpak is a traditional hat from Kyrgyzstan. I got one as a gift from my host family on my first trip there, and I bought, like, two or three others. And I wear it usually just as a way to easily stand out in a crowd. But it's definitely different. There's nothing like it that most people have ever seen who have never been to Central Asia. and I'm wearing my weird hat, and I've got my passport with its stamps from Amsterdam Schiphol Airport and Carthage Tunis Airport with its Arabic letters on it. And I'm trying to explain that I'm going to a game dev meetup that is for job networking, but it's not really work-related, and I don't explain it well at all. And I swear I said there was no cannabis in the car, but I do have a beard and long hair, so they took our papers, they had us pull over for a search, they had me come into the office and asked me, like, have you ever been in front of a judge for anything? Have you ever been arrested? And they do a criminal background check on me, and somehow the guy got the idea that I wasn't clear that there was no cannabis in the car, and he told me, if we find cannabis in there, that's $1,000 fine. Maybe they just have to meet a quota of cars searched or something. I mean, I'm sure security theater isn't an exclusively American thing. But now that I'm ranting about it, I remember there's one nuance to this story that I didn't tell you guys yet. Franklin County, especially the town of Phillips, where I come from, has a very long and storied reputation of black market marijuana production and dealing. I've got a link in the description to a New York Times article from back in the 80s about a friend of Norman Mailer, the famous author who was involved in a big marijuana smuggling operation that would fly supplies of marijuana into Canada back in the day. So in any case, they wind up searching the car for cannabis. And there was none. But he did find my mom's cell phone, which she lost. And I should add that my mom is going with me on this trip, first because she wants to look at possible houses to buy, or at least she was before the government banned foreigners from buying homes. And second, because if one of us catches COVID and gets sick up there, it would be nice to have an emergency contact up there than across an international border. So there's a silver lining in that. Anyway, after that, we go through, we get to the meetup just in time, and there's beer on tap and pizza, and I've been looking at this trip to Canada for a while now as kind of the big midterm in my French learning, because, you know, I can watch videos, I can take online classes, I can do Duolingo exercises, but I know it's not the same as actually going to a place where they speak the language and speaking it with native speakers. Like, am I going to fall flat on my face the minute I walk in there and try to speak it with them? No, I didn't. Before the talk, I started making some small talk with people, and it was all in French. I knew as the words were coming out of my mouth that I did not have as thick a Quebec accent as they did, but that didn't hurt their comprehension at all. And they even complimented me, saying that my French was really good. I don't think they were saying that to make me feel good. Then we get to the presentation from Jean-François Goulet, who's the director of programming at IDOS's new Sherbrooke office. And I could completely follow along and, well, completely. I could understand about 85% of what he said, which is a way higher percentage than, like, an arbitrary Tout le monde en parle segment. Probably helps that he was mostly talking about video games rather than something I don't care about. But the point is, he talked for probably an hour or an hour and a half, including the Q&A segment at the end, and I could follow along. There was one goof where I asked him a question, and I could not I couldn't figure out how we would translate, or if you would translate at all, ray traced voxel rendering. It relates to a tech project that they had on their website. And so I asked the question in English and he responded in English. But other than that, it was all in French and I understood a lot of it. So that was part one of my big French midterm. But the next morning, things got kind of stressful. Just to clarify what the timetable for this was, on Wednesday the 6th, the meetup Gaming Drinks Sherbrooke had a meeting with this guest speaker. And then there was nothing on Thursday the 7th. And then Friday the 8th, Saturday the 9th, Sunday the 10th was the game jam. So my mom and I are getting breakfast at Coco Fruity, which is this awesome restaurant in downtown Sherbrooke that you should definitely check out if you're ever there. And I bring up my phone and we're looking at the new numbers from the public health agency on how many new cases and hospitalizations there are in Sherbrooke. And because the case numbers and hospitalizations were clearly on the up and up, we decided to head back to Phillips. And fortunately, the rules of the game jam were set up in such a way that I could participate in it remotely. So then comes French midterms part 2 and 3. I managed to place my order at the restaurant, no problem. Spoke with the waitress in French the whole time. And then before we left, we stopped by a Tim Hortons, and I managed to go in there with all the cross chatter in the background and stuff and order coffee and Boston cream donuts, which, by the way, are still not better than Dunkin' Donuts, but the coffee's better. So at least they have that. And then we went back. But we were still really, really conflicted at the idea of coming back to Sherbrooke on Friday. And to talk about the decision-making process that went into that Friday morning, I recorded this clip.
So, we evaluated the risk-to-benefit ratio multiple times.
And this was Friday morning, right? Like the day that we would have had to go back to Sherbrooke in order for me to participate in the jam, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I think we were looking at hospitalizations, we were looking at who was in intensive care. We were looking at the numbers of cases per 100,000. And like before we went down, we had like an upper limit of 666 cases per 100K because doom. But it was like the longer we stayed there, the less our risk tolerance was.
So when we got up on Friday morning, I said no. You went back to bed for a while. And then we waited until 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then we waited till 11:15, and they finally got the numbers out. And the numbers were so high that I was quite content that, in fact, we'd made the right decision not to go.
Right.
So the risk was very high.
Right. And I think it broke above 400 per 100,000, like, just yesterday or something. And we're recording this on Wednesday. So it was definitely on the up and up. I remember saying something about how, like, I need to get AAA connections because Eidos Sherbrooke is sponsoring this game jam, and there are also people from Ubisoft who are going to be there, and that made the difference for you, right?
Right, because even though the risk was very, very high, the more we talked about it, the more we realized the benefit was also extremely high.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
I don't know if you want to put this in the podcast, but there was an additional risk that had nothing to do with COVID, and that's the risk of being stuck in the United States if another Trump gets elected, or if the MAGA people take over both houses of the legislature in 2022.
Right, which they likely will. Oh, God. Yup. And so with that, we got in the car and drove back north again and had a much better time when we got to the border crossing, too. Do you want to talk about that? Because you were actually doing most of the talking.
Well, on the second trip up, the person who met us had quite a strong French accent and was trying to figure out how we were all related, since Pierre has a French last name and the rest of us in the car had very English last names. And when he found out that that's because Pierre's lineage on his father's side was in fact from Quebec, he got very friendly.
Yeah.
And he asked why our car was searched the first time. And I said, well, I think it was because Pierre was wearing his call pack, which I pulled out of the call pack compartment, otherwise known as the glove compartment in most cars. And he said, oh, Mongolian. To which he said, well, I don't have any problem with that hat.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the end of the interview.
And then we were on our way, and that took so little time, we were able to check into our hotel and then head up to the center. I think I'll just pick up the story at the end of that clip. Bye! Oh, wait, do you have anything you want to plug?
Not on this one, but maybe in the next recording. Stay tuned.
Thanks again, Mom, for sitting down with me to talk about our decision. And yeah, I live in a town where there are sympathizers, if not outright members, of militias like the Three Percenters who were involved in the January 6th riot, and when you live in a place like that, the fear of the giant fascism countdown timer is omnipresent. So we went back up to the border and started the jam. Like many game jams, there's a theme to this that they announced at the beginning. There was a little bit of, like, matchmaking to help people get set up in teams. The maximum number of people was four. So there was me, and I wound up doing art. There was Olivier, who's from Sherbrooke and did programming. Francois, I think he's also from Sherbrooke and did sound effects. And he also has a really cool game out on Steam right now called The Repairing Mantis. And I put the link in the description. You should definitely check it out. And Troy, Daniel K., anybody else who does audio-only Let's Plays, you should Let's Play this. Check it out. And finally, Islander, who did some of the music. So the theme was duality, and as usually happens in the first few hours of a game jam, we spent a lot of time talking and throwing ideas at the wall, and what eventually stuck was this rhythm game where you have one player character running along trying to dodge obstacles and beat little enemy characters in the upper half of the screen, and it's upright, and then on the lower half of it, everything is upside down, like the other characters in China or something on the other side of the planet, and it has a different theme, and there are different enemies, but the gameplay is the same, and it's kind of like a two-player co-op setup. And in the upper half of the screen, everything is, like, nature-themed, so there's the enemy characters are animals, things like bears and bats. The background is, like, this nice blue sky with some natural scenery in the background. And in the lower half, it's, like, at dusk, and there's a destroyed city, and there's all sorts of post-apocalyptic imagery, and the enemy characters are robots. And I'll be right back after this promo.
Have you ever tried eating a corned beef sandwich in zero gravity?
Are you a veteran of the Great Emu War of 1932?
Do you long for a simpler time when the world's greatest global crisis involved horse manure?
If the answer to any of these questions was no, then we have the podcast for you.
Epic Fails of History.
A podcast that delves into the most epic fails of, history.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Hey, we had a problem here.
Epic Fails of History.
Subscribe today on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbean, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We've got more random tales of fail coming your way, so stay tuned for more epic fails of history.
And so to get into more detail on the art side of things, characters, both the player character and the enemy characters, would be pixel art, but we wanted to use low-poly 3D models for the backgrounds. And because the theme was duality, I brought out my standard color palette for game jams when I'm doing pixel art, which is the Sega Master System color palette, the best 8-bit color palette, and you can't convince me otherwise. And I started coming up with, like, sort of natural greens and blues for the nature setting, and some grays and, like, one custom dark gray for the post-apocalyptic setting. And I started drawing out characters and decided, okay, the nature character is going to be green, and I put some, like, grays in a few different places on the character. And in the post-apocalyptic scene, I create a gray, kind of dark grayish character with some little bits of green. And by the time I had made all those design decisions, I was well off to the races. I went back and counted how much pixel art that I made between Friday afternoon and Saturday afternoon, and I counted something like 22 different pieces of pixel art. Some of those are animations, so there's 3 to 5 frames of them. I was an art machine all throughout the jam, and whenever I think back about like how I could have possibly done things better, the thing that I keep coming back to in my mind is, I was an art machine. I was just not solely focused. I was very, very focused on producing art content to get in the game, and I definitely made some efforts to talk with my other team members about what we were doing and make sure we were on the same page, but I was an art machine. And of course, all of that pixel art was done with the understanding that I would have to very quickly switch to some low poly assets. And I counted those up, and I had about 11 different low poly models made for it. Fortunately, I didn't have to think too much about texturing. I just dropped a diffuse texture on it with often the same colors that I was using for the pixel art, and that was fine for what we were trying to do. Let me know if you want to check them out. I bundled them up in a Unity package that you can just import into your own project if you like. So, by the second day of the jam, the way the food situation was set up was the organizers would go around to all the different jammers and, like, give out these little paper clip-outs that say, this gives you the right to one meal down at the canteen. And so, let me just describe the layout of the convention for a second. The game jam was taking place up on the second floor of the convention center in this, like, atrium area with a bunch of desks and stuff. And what I would do is I would go downstairs, and then you go into the main event area, where at the same time as the game jam, they were holding this video game slash board game convention. Like, Eidos Sherbrooke had the new Guardians of the Galaxy game set up. There was some tournament going on with a bunch of retro games. And yeah, as I'm walking along the convention floor to get to the canteen, that there's enough people there who are masked, but still, I'm looking around and I'm thinking, holy shit, I am going to get COVID here. I mean, at the very least, like, once I went down there and I got my food, I would go back to the atrium to eat it there instead of being surrounded by, 20, 30 people in the same area. The food was okay. It's convention food, and towards the end, I think they started to run out of supply a little bit, or things wound up on back order, so, like, I think for dinner on Saturday, I had, like, a single slice of pizza and a can of Coke. Fortunately, I managed to get all of the pixel art done at around 4 p.m., and fortunately, that went way faster than the pixel art, and I finished all but one model by the time I packed up and went home at about 9. Day 3 rolls around. I get to the convention center. It's still pretty early in the morning. Only Francois is there, and he asks me, so what are we doing with the project? And I log into Discord, and there's a message from Olivier that was posted a little bit after midnight on Friday, so, like, you know, 9 hours before I had gotten there. And he says, sorry, guys, I give up. Let's try again next year. And I want to be clear, there's, like, absolutely no hard feelings over this. In game jams, relationships matter more than what you can put on the screen. Yeah, for, like, about an hour there, it seemed like we really didn't have much to submit. Until Olivier came back saying, well, maybe I can put something together. And so, more or less at the last minute, he threw together a few things, and we wound up with what is on the itch page right now. So, backing up a little bit, this was the 10th game jam that I've ever participated in, and I think there have been 3 game jams, including this one, where at the end we didn't have what you could reasonably call a completed game. There was Galaxy Garden, that space gardening game that I came up with. There was Quantum Lock for the Epic Mega Jam, and there was this. In the case of Galaxy Garden, we had the guy who I sort of had lined up for pixel art stuff. He kind of backed out before the jam started and then only came back in until, like, the last day. So I ended up doing a lot of the pixel art on top of the programming. In the case of Quantum Lock, we were using Unreal 4 with a programmer who was mostly in Unity. And we were trying to do a mechanic involving portals, like in the game Portal. And he wasn't really able to get that working at the end. And in the case of the game jam, again, not trying to knock Olivier at all. He had a background in Unity, but I think it was mostly in 3D. And so we were trying to make a game based on the 2D project template with a significant amount of sprites that have to do all sorts of things. And that can be kind of intimidating if you're doing something with it for the first time. Plus, we were making a rhythm game, and those can be incredibly complicated if you haven't made one of them before. And so, anybody planning to participate in a game jam in the future, this is where things can pretty reliably go wrong. Just make sure that when you're planning out your idea, you check in with your programmer to make sure that you're not asking too much of them. Because especially if you don't have source control set up or like other team members who know how to set things up in your engine of choice, the programmer is going to have that extra burden of not just writing the code that makes the game work the way you guys envision it, but they're also going to have the extra duty of bringing in all of your assets and making them work the way they're supposed to. And don't make a rhythm game unless you absolutely have to. Just don't. You'll make it so much easier for yourself if you steer away from it. And the way the jam was set up, they had judges who would go around and evaluate. Basically, we'd give them a little presentation of the game, and then afterwards they would all go around and evaluate and play our submission a little bit. We had my laptop open for everybody to sit down and take a look at it. Most of the judges spent time with the other submissions. And there was a little feedback basically saying that we could have had better communication within the team, just to make sure that everybody was on the same page and who was supposed to make what. And I honestly think that if we had just set up our idea and our project infrastructure better so that we weren't burdening our programmer too much, a lot of the kinds of discussions of who's working on what, what's the most important thing to add, who's getting what set up, could have happened, and we could have wound up with a better product. We didn't have a whole lot to show off at the end, but at the end of the jam, Islander said, "Even if we come in last, I don't regret anything." And I think we all agree with that. We still had a good run of it, learned some new things, and I managed to hand out a few business cards to some people. And there was also a raffle for some lightsabers. And I won one of them, and it's hanging outside here. Wait a minute. I wonder if I can turn it on and it'll show up in audio. Anybody want some lightsaber ASMR? Hang on. Okay, I think it might be one of those old Republic lightsabers that you have to recharge. I'm just going to put this away and plug it in and keep recording, and maybe you'll hear it later. I don't know. Or not. It turns out I just had to hold down the right button. I think it does change the sound a little bit if you wave it around and stuff. I think they changed color, like, when it hits something. There were a few folks doing little lightsaber fights throughout the jam. So if I just tap it... Nope, doesn't... Oh! Okay, there we go. Can I get it? Yeah, there we go. Well, that's fun. Can I turn it off? If I just press this again? Yeah. Cool. And that's made in Sherbrooke. It wasn't made in China or something. I'm looking at the label and it says made and distributed by Calamasil Probotic Inc. in Sherbrooke. That's amazing. So once we got home, the big question hanging over everybody's heads was, of course, did we catch COVID? I am recording this on April 15th, 5 days since I got home, and fortunately, the answer seems to be no. We all had a little bit of cold-like symptoms, just a little bit of fatigue, maybe a not-quite fever, some coughing. I was kind of on the edge of thinking maybe I'll take an antigen test if these symptoms continue, but the simple fact is they didn't continue. Everybody got out of this, despite the crazy high COVID rates, uninfected. It's a testament to the vaccine, the booster, and I think the N95 masks that we wore as much as possible. So to wrap this all up, there are a bunch of cities throughout the northeastern U.S., Sanford, Biddeford, Lewiston in Maine, Fall River in Massachusetts, Poughkeepsie in New York, where decent jobs are something you read about in the history books. You know, in the historical society building that nobody goes into, there are plenty of photos of all of the mills and factories and sepia that now dominate the landscape that you can read about, but they're closed nowadays, and nobody's ever gone in there and made something since before most of the people who live in that town were born. And, you know, one of two things happens. One is try to gentrify the community, turn those mills into apartments, and try to beg people to come up from Boston for a staycation. Or two, there is no number two. If you happen to go to school in that town, and not all of those places have colleges, once you have your degree, it's like, good luck going to Boston or New York to find a decent living, because you're not going to find it here. But Sherbrooke, it has, like, the University of Sherbrooke and Bishop's, which is the Anglophone university, and the skyline is dominated by places that are still open and doing things, and it's like they're there to absorb the college graduates and to keep them there. And so what I keep thinking the whole time that I'm up there is, Sherbrooke is what Sanford could have been. It's what Poughkeepsie could have been. I come away from Sherbrooke feeling like it has a future, and there are so many places in the Northeast that simply don't. Or if they do, it's a gentrified hellscape that maybe a couple of trust fund kids with some weird ideas about small town life that they took from a novel would want to be a part of. See the link in the description about how Peter Buffett, Warren Buffett's son, has turned the town of Kingston, New York into his own nonprofit industrial complex fiefdom. But it's not something I'd want to live in. And, you know, when I ran for state rep, I was trying to, you know, run on a message of trying to revitalize rural Maine, but nope, I'm a mom's basement dweller for saying that everybody should have health care. I don't belong south of the border. And, you know, while I'm trying my best to find something in Sherbrooke, I'm, as in-person game dev meetups start up again, I'm gonna go to every place in Quebec that they hold them and try to make contacts. If I find work in Sherbrooke, I'll move there. Great. If I find it in Montreal, I'm moving there. But it's only a matter of time before I get my ass to Quebec. Permanently. Well, that's everything I wanted to go over. You might notice that I didn't spend too much time talking about my French learning. What I'm gonna do is write a blog post talking about where things stand there now that I finished the Duolingo French tree. There might be a link in the description, or not. It depends on when this episode comes out and when the blog post comes out. If not, check our social media. I'm sure there'll be a post about it there. I wonder how Arjuna and Robo Gonzalez are doing with La Mise Aventure Sacrée. Let's go find out. How does it look?
Well, for some reason, the googly eyes broke when we upgraded it to Unreal 5, and I think the water isn't working in the main island scene. It says something about the water brush is out of date. We may have to change that. But otherwise, it seems like everything else works.
Do you think maybe we should roll it back to the early access version?
No, let's do the work to figure out why it isn't working in 5. I mean, they can't have changed Control Rig that much. We should explain to the listeners what Control Rig is, shouldn't we? Yeah, Control Rig is this fancy thing that Epic Games has set up for animations that you can put together in Editor. I really like it.
Okay, I think that's the end of the episode. Stay tuned for more thoughts to and from Quebec and from the Editor. And from the Level Editor. Bye! Hey, where'd Robo Gonzalez go?
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work
for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.